Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Aldar Properties' first quarter 2020 financial results analyst and investor call. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today. There will be a question and answer session after the management's presentation. I would now like to hand the conference over to Greg Fuller, Chief Financial and Sustainability Officer at Aldar. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Aldar Properties' third quarter financial results call. My name is Greg Fuller, and I'm the Chief Financial and Sustainability Officer here at Aldar. Firstly, I hope you are all keeping safe and well, and I appreciate all of you taking the time to join us for today's call. Before we begin, I just want to take a moment to thank our team. COVID-19 has brought unprecedented challenges to both our business and our stakeholders. We're super proud that we've been able to adapt to these uncertain and often very challenging conditions, whilst what you'll hear later is delivering what we think are exceptional operating and financial results, whilst focusing and maintaining health and safety practices to the highest standards possible for our employees, our customers, and the communities in which we serve. So deeply appreciative of all our staff and people who sit behind these results. I would like to start by providing an overview of our quarterly performance, then we'll open up quickly to questions. So I'll now run through the headline numbers for the third quarter, which has really been a stellar quarter for us, and highlights the strength of our diversified business model. In this period, Aldar achieved a very strong business performance, driven by record quarterly development sales. In the third quarter, on a consolidated basis, revenue is up 30% year-on-year to 2.1 billion dirhams, and gross profit was also up 5% year-on-year to 696 million dirhams. Net profit came in for the quarter at 416 million dirhams, which is an 8% increase versus the same quarter last year. Looking at the development management side of the business, we had a very strong third quarter, delivering record sales of 1.2 billion dirhams, representing a  7% increase year-on-year, and also a record quarterly revenues for us in the development division of 1.3 billion dirhams, more than double the level from the same quarter of 2019. As at the end of September 2020, 86% of our development pipeline had been sold, taking into account the launch of an additional 390 units at our Water's Edge development on Yas Island during the quarter. The development management business has also performed strongly on a cash collection basis, with 3.1 billion dirhams collected year to date from units handed over and projects under development. Moving on to our asset management business, our recurring income portfolio produced a net operating income of 383 million dirhams, representing a 3.5% decline versus the same quarter of 2019. The portfolio has held up well on account of high occupancy in our residential and commercial segments of the business, which have offset softness in the retail and hospitality segments. We're also witnessing and expecting improvements in the hospitality and retail segments following the easing of lockdown measures. Sales experienced by our retail tenants across our portfolio in the third quarter were in line with last year, and our hospitality assets are expected to benefit from upcoming bubble events, such as the UFC Fight Island and the Formula One coming this December. Occupancy remains steady at 87% across the investment property portfolio, which includes residential, retail, and commercial, and benefits from long-term and committed lease contracts. Weighted average lease tenors range from 3 to 5 years across our portfolio as at the quarter end. Our adjacent businesses' net operating income was up 5% versus the previous quarter and included strong performances from Aldar Education, which is up 44% versus the third quarter of 2019, as well as by Khidma and Provis. Khidma is our facility management business, Provis our property management business, where gross profit collectively between them was up 33% versus the third quarter of 2019. Aldar maintains a strong cash and liquidity position with 4.5 billion dirhams of gross cash, comprising 2.5 billion dirhams of free cash, 1.1 billion dirhams of restricted cash, and just under a billion dirhams of cash in escrow. Our average debt maturity today sits at 4.8 years with no immediate loan repayments coming up until August of 2021, and an average total cost of debt of under 3% at 2.9%. So overall, Aldar's diversified business model with relatively low debt exposure and strong cash position allows us to actively pursue opportunities to invest in both our development pipeline and in expanding our investment portfolio. We seek opportunities to earn steady income from our third-party development management business, which is set to expand further following the new mandate announced in late October, whereby we're taking over the development and management of a portfolio of over 30 billion dirhams of projects from the government of Abu Dhabi. This is in addition to the current portfolio of projects we're managing for the government amounting to 5 billion dirhams that we discussed in 2019. So that concludes my comments. And with that, I'm happy to pass it back to Marina, the operator, who will coordinate questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Please be informed that there might be a short silence while questions are being registered. Thank you. First question comes from Tahir Safieddine, JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Greg, and congratulations on the good set of numbers. Couple of questions, if I may. Maybe we'll start one by one. Just on the development portfolio, the gross margin on the property development is down to 27% compared to around 35% last quarter and 36% in 2019. So I just want to get an understanding what's happening there. Is it purely a revenue mix sort of change that's dragging the margin down? That's my first question on the development. And the second question, can you give us some color on this cash collection trend? I mean, it was very strong year to date. You said around 3 billion gross cash collections. As you move into handover phase into Q4 and next year, can we just get some color on what amount of free cash, you know, like gross cash net of capex that you're expected to collect? That would be helpful. And then maybe I'll just go to the other question after that, please.
Sure. Okay, Tahir, thanks. So on the gross profit margin in the development business, a couple of trends to note. The first is on the home building side, the core home building side, not the fee-based management side. You saw a combination. There was some slight increased costs that came from one of our projects on Yaz. But primarily what's happening is that as we were moving a lot of inventory, we were discounting a bit to move the inventory. And so that contributed to a slight reduction in the margins from the home building business. The other thing to note is we're really ramping up that 5 billion dirham program that we discussed, that we announced last year. The structure of those contracts are such that we record revenue and cost of goods sold and about a 10% roughly profit margin on those, as opposed to a 5% fee. We're recording a 10% profit margin, but putting the full building, let's say for 2454 at Yaz Island or the National Housing at Al Falah, we're putting the full real estate through the P&L. So there's a bit of a gross up in revenue and a lower profit margin, but it represents the sort of risk-free nature of that business. But it's shaping the P&L a little bit, and that's driving the profit margin changes you're looking at. With respect to the cash collection trend, yeah, I mean, look, a couple things conspired on development year to date. I mean, we were able to keep the business of construction moving. That allowed us to complete our projects, and our customers are performing. They're making final payments. We've worked very hard with the banks to make sure that there's the mortgage product in place, and we partnered with the local banks here to have some of that ready for handover, and that's worked very well for us to enable to enable these collections. So as you know, we're in still in a handover period where we've got Yaz Acres still to be handing over, and we're going to be opening up to Water's Edge very soon on Yaz Island for handover. And we're looking at about 1 billion dirham a quarter roughly in the current wave of development to still hand over as we finish finish collecting at the bridges at Ream, which is handed over, and into the Yaz Island delivery schedule.
And against that, how much is like CapEx, remaining CapEx, SG&A? If we just want to think about from a free cash point of view? I mean, should we expect what, around maybe 2.5-3 billion in terms of free cash from all of these deliveries, handovers?
Yeah, roughly. I mean, again, I guide you back to our famous chart in the investor pack, which really chronicles and puts in time sequence when we're going to hand over the various projects. And then we guide the profit margins roughly for the various developments. Lands tend to be 40% plus. The middle income stuff is low 20s. And then the villa product is sort of in that 35% profit range. That's your best way to build up, to build up the free cash profile that comes from the successful collection of these projects, and then the receipt of the final payment. Or we're into the point now where, you know, there's generally, you know, pretty little capex. I mean, our overall program now sits at about 3.1 billion of overall capex, but we've got a lot of land, Tahir, in the near term, and that's not as heavy lifting from the capex perspective as you know the big stuff like Yaz Acres and Jawahar and Mamsha is. So this cash flow cycle we're in now will be quite cash positive, as we've already spent most of the capex at places like Yaz Acres, and we're ready for the final payments due from customers as we hand over sections G and D and H.
Okay. All right. Perfect. And just one final follow-up, sorry, before I give it to others. On the development management, I mean, MOU of 30 billion, that's massive. Clearly, the stock has reacted positively. I mean, just can you give us some just more color? We understand that these are usually fee-based projects. You've had already a couple of experiences, I mean, from the past in terms of doing such type of businesses. But now it's a big amount, which is 30 billion backlog. If you can get some, to give us more color on the structure of these projects, is going to be off balance sheet, pre-funded, what nature of margin, and how should we think about, you know, the development management gross profit trends moving forward? I mean, I'm assuming this is going to be a massive growth from next year onwards.
Yeah, it look very much so. And I think that, I mean, it was MOU for now, so I think we're going to conclude the definitive documents this quarter, so we'll be able to be extremely precise once those are done. But it is our full expectation that the model will be the fee-based model that we executed, let's say, West Yaz in Kazakhstan on, where we just get a low single-digit development fee for managing. And then the government 100% funds everything. The government takes the cost overrun risk, and they receive the benefits of cost savings. So it's purely a development management arrangement. From an execution perspective, it's a big ramp up, but it's important to note that there's an existing program that we're stepping into really to take over. So there are people, there is an apparatus in place that's already positioned to execute these. The current state of contracts, and we think there'll be more added to it. You know, it's really, it's very much a public-private partnership, and a very unique one in its scale and commercial format, where it's not just the first 30, there will be more.
Okay, so I mean, just doing some rough numbers, like assuming a 5% margin on 30 billion over 4 years, which was the MOU, I mean, we're talking about gross profit or NOI of somewhere around 350, 400 million per year. I mean, do these numbers make sense? I mean, overall,
yes.
Is this what should we expect from next year? I mean, in the development management type of businesses?
Yes, I mean, look, that's a revenue
okay.
number, so there'll be a cost of goods sold attached to them in the form of people and technology and things
okay.
like that. But it's the margin on that business is typically exceedingly high, and at the kind of scale we're developing at, there'll be a lot of platform synergies and technology synergies to maintain a very healthy margin on it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Tahir.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Next question comes from Alok Navani, Gavash Trading. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gents, and thank you very much for the call. A couple of questions from my side. The first one is on your NOI, specifically the the retail component. I'm interested to know what kind of relief measures are there in place for your small asset, and what kind of conversations you've had with your tenants for this year and perhaps next. Also, your commercial side of the business seems to be doing fairly well with like-for-like around flat, but occupancy is a bit higher. Nonetheless, revenue growth seems to be encouraging. So is it really more of filling up spare inventory? Just like to understand what's happening there. And finally, if you could also just comment on the fact that, I mean, Arabtech no longer seems to be active in the market, and I'm not really sure if they were one of your prime contractors, but assuming they were, you would have to find replacements for that contractor, and I'm just wondering what that would kind of imply for your development margins looking ahead on the pipeline that you perhaps might have to replace.
Yeah. Okay, so just in order then, Alok, so the first question was on NOI retail. And yeah, look, that's down. I mean, there's 120 down to 102, reflecting to a large part the relief measures that we've announced. So we came out very early and announced an overall program of 190 million, of which we allocated at that time about 90 million to retailers, and we're almost fully deployed or fully committed, let's say, on that component of the stimulus, our stimulus program that was targeted towards the tenants. We've taken a very case-by-case approach to it, where things were pretty dark, at the height of lockdown, and as is true with our messaging, is we are seeing a couple positive trends in Abu Dhabi with the closed borders with Dubai. We're seeing a lot more stay-at-home shopping, and that's really benefited our malls. We've got our current trading is roughly flat to where we were pre-COVID right now as we speak, and so the status of the tenants has commensurably improved with that. And so the team's been all over the tenants, and they're being very partner oriented and very commercial in the way that they're dispensing that stimulus. So good tenants who are the right mix for us that are just losing a lot of money right now, that's the kind of person that we're giving stimulus to, and it's been received generally very well with the with the overall within the retail community. I mean, you really haven't seen the kind of volatility that you've seen down the road, and I think in some sense the Abu Dhabi retail scene is like with our results and everything we're showing, there's a bit of a safe harbor in terms of relative performance with other retail assets in the region. So our tenants are acknowledging that in our discussions, which is really just endearing them further to our assets, which I think helps us. Commercial, yeah. Look, commercial. The numbers look good. I mean, I think there's a few things going on sort of under the sheets there. I mean, we have some improved occupancy, so we've got a very strong tier one commercial office portfolio. So the I'd say it's fully stabilized and operating fairly efficiently at 90% plus. And so the occupancies quarter on quarter, 89, 90, 91, they're sort of just reflecting a normal churn of people in and out. That we are seeing some softness though in rental rates. So I think, embedded in those numbers are some sort of settlements on historical, issues we had with some of our tenants who we've just had, favorable commercial agreements with. So I think, you are seeing like small single digit declines year on year in rent in commercial office, but on by and large, it's a very steady business for us. On Arabtech, I mean, look, we're by far, especially with this announcement with ADQ, I mean, we are, the most important master developer in the Abu Dhabi market. And we take that leadership role extremely seriously when it comes to ensuring the health and wealth of our supply chain. And so, yeah, Arabtech was a very important counterparty here, and we don't have hardly any exposure to them right now. But yeah, when someone that large, falls away, it's incumbent on people like us to take a leadership role and work with contractors who are already in the region, whether they're in Dubai or some of the other Emirates or in Saudi or other places, are talented and they can and they have expertise in the areas that we want to develop. You know, people like us are in a position where we can bring them to Abu Dhabi. People like working with us. We're very professional. We pay on time. We go out of our way to pay on time. We really make sure that our supply chain is well fed. You know, sitting on the top of that that real estate pyramid, you know, we need to make sure that we're paying on time so that the prime contractor can pay the subcontractors, can pay the subcontractors, and so on and so on. That's one of our operating philosophies. So. I think we got a bit of work to do there. I don't see any margin issues. I mean, the other dynamic that happens is that the contractors that are here at a time like this, you know, they really tend to flock to the quality developers. So we still don't have issues not getting people bidding for our contracts. I think we do take a more of an industry-wide role as leader in the industry saying, look, there's definitely room for some more contractors to come down the road. But we witnessed that they are in the region. They do like doing business with people like us. Our current pipeline of projects, we don't have any issues, you know, getting contractors to come because we're strong and people like doing business with us and they know they can make money from us, because we pay on time and such. So, we feel good about our portfolio and the margins. So I hope that's a very long-winded answer to your three questions.
Much appreciated, Greg. Thank you. I just had one final question before I let you go. Just your view on dividends for this year. You've been quite prescriptive on that front prior years. I understand it's a slightly different environment, but your results are quite encouraging as well. So I'm just trying to think about how you might be approaching this topic.
Yeah, I mean, look, as I say every time, I mean, the exact same slide that we show the investors every time we talk to you guys is the exact same slide that goes to our board annually to recommend the dividend. So it's transparent for a reason. So you guys are on tune with our thinking, and it's based on the cash that we collect from our two businesses. So what we're seeing to date is, strong performance from the development management business. So I'd say we're pretty much on par in terms of expectations thus far. And, we were late in Q3 in terms of the kind of cash we're collecting from that business. And, is it consistent with, our guidances from the past? It's looking pretty good. The asset management side. I mean, you can see right from our results, we're still losing money in hotels. So year on year, that hurts. We're down in asset management as well. We've 66% collected on cash in terms of our investment properties against all the build that we've sent out this far. That's also improving quite a bit. So I think that's an important marker that we'll see into the fourth quarter. How do our retail primarily, but the commercial and the residential tenants, how are they performing on the actual agreed rental invoices that we send to them? And so that's a positive trend. I mean, it was under 50%, during COVID, and it was at the end of Q3, it was about 66%, and as I sit here today, it's well above 70%. So that's that all also bodes well going in. But I think, because of the hotel number and because of just lower rents and the retail side, I think, we'll watch that space carefully in the fourth quarter. The only other thing I'd add on top of that is I think the ADQ announcement as a general overlay, and a positive overhang, if there's such thing as a positive overhang, but heading into 2021, we've got a lot of visibility around good fee generating income from managing these projects for the government. And I think that also puts the board and management in a certain frame of mind when it comes to, the overall dividend recommendations, bearing in mind that we're still in a COVID, environment, and people are very concerned about jobs still and non-hydrocarbon economic development. And, we've got some very idiosyncratic positive things putting some wind in our sails.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Divya Arora, Daman Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the conference call. My first question is linked to the development sales. So what we have seen is that there was a strong pickup in this quarter. So we saw that you did around 1.2 billion in the development sales, and you said that the reason for that is also the pent-up demand. So just to understand, you know, given the underlying demand dynamics in Abu Dhabi, for over the next 2 to 3 years, if you have to look at, still the environment is tough, but if the things normalize in next 6 months to 1 year, what is the intrinsic amount of demand do you see for you? Can you do 3 billion in a year, 4 billion in a year? And why that is important is that because we have seen that your development revenue has picked up pretty well this year. So you have done already 2.7 billion in the last 9 months, so which should annualize to around 3.4, 3.5 billion for this year, which would mean that you should be doing around 3.5 to 4 billion in terms of development sales to make sure that this is sustainable, or there might be some inventory which could be used. But just what is that number that we're looking at 2 to 3 years down the line annually?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we've guided pretty consistently, you know, this concept of through the cycle, we see ourselves developing about 1,500 households a year. And so we've been talking, in, you know, in those terms for, you know, really since, 2014, 2015. I'd say we're running a little behind that just because this year, not much though, but because this year, you know, we haven't launched anything new to date. But that's really a statement around, you know, that's the final answer after some home building calculus, you know, gets run, which is the combination of change in population, it's dilapidation rates and irrelevant and powerful demographic shifts, whether it, you know, a very young Emirati population getting older and number of people per household for UAE nationals reducing over time. And that's all stuff that creates demand for new homes. And so all that calculus works, and we see that you know, sometimes dilapidation is a more powerful coefficient than the change in population, and the demographic one is a pretty constant and growing one, and everyone spends a lot of time, understandably, on the population one, but they probably spend a little less time than they should on the dilapidation and the demographic one when it comes to the requirement for new homes in our market. So generally, you know, we're not changing that language going forward. You know, 1,500 units a year in new launches, you know, absent, of course, a pandemic black swan, we see when the market opens up again, and we also view our market as relatively in balance from a supply and demand perspective, to pick that pace up again, you know, immediately on the market reopening. And as a market leader, you know, we're very close to the pulse on when we think that time is right to bring new product to our market.
All right. Just to go into your dividend policy, you mentioned that for the asset management business, it is 65 to 80% of the distributable free cash flow. How should we get to this number? Because we see that you give the NOI or the gross profit by this segment, but then the SG&A are at the group level. So how should we come to this number?
So the rest of the walk from the net operating income number, you know, there's interest, okay, and pretty much, you know, all our interest is attributable to the bonds that we issue out of AIP. So AIP is those financials are a great source of to see how much interest is attributable to that. There's maintenance CapEx, of which there's very little, like around 100 million or less. Annually, and then there's OPEX, which runs between 50 and 70 million in terms of technology, people, investment, platform costs, things like that. The guys have an update on the investor pack. I don't know if it's been updated. Usually in the fourth quarter we update that just so people can see clearly in the from the accounts which key items to focus on. But the biggest by far, though, is interest, which is mostly attributable to the asset management side of the business.
Okay. All right. Thank you. This last question on the receivables, trade receivables, we have seen that they have gone up from 2.3 to 2.7 billion, and also your revenue has been up. But just to understand this increase in the receivables, is this coming more from the side of the retail side? As you said that you have collected 66% of your rents, or there is also a portion which is coming from the development side?
Yeah, I mean, definitely from both. So the development side, there's a separate line in the financials called due from customers under sale of property contracts. So that receivable represents this idea that, towards the end of the development, if we're 100% complete, we've recorded 100% of the revenue, yet we've only collected between 30 and 50% of the cash from the client. And as we're late in a delivery cycle, you're going to see that receivable grow. The balance that you're referring to, yeah, it refers to trade receivables, which is coming to a large extent from the asset management portfolio.
Okay. Is there also a link to the post-payment plans over here? So that's flowing into the trade receivables part, or that's flowing into the gross amount due from the customer on contracts, the post-payment plans?
Sorry, Alok, can you repeat that?
Sorry, I'm talking about the post-payment plans, the receivables which are linked to the post-payment plans. Where are they exactly going into this in the balance?
Very good. Yeah, correct. So that's true. So the final units, when they flip into, when they're completed and they move from, in accounting terms, when we finish construction on site, then we change the recognition on the balance sheet. The receivable moves from this gross amounts due from customers on contracts for sale of properties. A bit of a mouthful, but that's the line in the note 10. It flips to trade receivables, so that's true, and that's even true of customer. Like sometimes customers take a month or 2 months or 3 months to make that final payment. That final receivable reduction will come down from trade receivables because of that reclassification.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. But also, just a footnote is, yep. We're really, we're not in that business of post handover payment plans. I mean, I think our overall balance sheet exposure is sort of in the order of like $200 million, $250 million in post handover payment plans. We're extremely selective on when they happen. We announced a rent to own plan, very limited, in a very limited extension of product like that. We really think as a developer, you need to rely on the banks and other people to finance, and we just want to build and sell.
But just the thing on receivables itself, so are you comfortable, with the current amount of receivables on your books, or you think there could be a risk of impairments in Q4? Or IFRS is taking care of
look,
that?
In the subset that belongs to retail, I think once we fully squeeze our way out of the COVID bit, and notwithstanding everything I said about improved conditions, I mean, we're coming off, just an absolutely atrocious position where a lot of tenants have really, taken a body blow, and even trading on par with last year might not be enough. We're definitely not calling an end to risk in that asset class. I mean, we're well provisioned right now, and we study that very closely and very carefully. Could you see some more in the future? Absolutely. Every day is a new day, and the risk horizon expands 24 hours every day of the week. And we're still watching that space very closely. But we're very comfortable with our overall provisioning that we have right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Alok.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Next question comes from Amil Dixit from Abu Dhabi National Insurance Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Greg. Thanks for hosting the call. Just a question on the fair value decrease in the investment properties. And I noticed from the note that the fair value decrease was based on an internal valuation. Now, given how negative the commentary has been on the property market this year, do you expect a big delta between the number you have for 30th September and the number you will take at the end of the year? Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, the internal valuation, for Q3 is really coming off the back of a Q2 set of valuations where we had lots of third parties come in. So we literally had every asset valued twice. Really had a lot of third party input into our second quarter valuations. And so I think that, coupled with nothing but positive trading since we had that intense work done in the second quarter, I think made us comfortable to we're in a position as management to show the balance sheet numbers that we're showing. Fourth quarter we'll revisit again with the third party, and I think that the same comment applies to the fair values that I just made to the trade receivables, which is every day of the week the risk horizon moves out and the assumptions you have programmed into your current values get retested based on new states of the world and we'll see then. But there's definitely risk in the real estate business. There's no doubt about it. We feel great about our assets. I mean, our performance stands for itself. I mean, our overall yields as a percent of our book values, I think, are extremely reasonable. And at times like when you value these assets, and at times like when we talk to this peer group, that we're reminded that we're a dollar-based currency real estate business with free flows of capital in and out of our country, no tax, and your real estate yielding 7% plus, and it's a very, very positive asset class from a valuation perspective. So there's a lot of reasons to feel good about valuation. There's COVID risk out there. Vaccines may or may not work. There's a lot of reasons to feel nervous about it. So I think we bring all that to the table in the fourth quarter with our valuers.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question comes from Mohammed Haidar, Arkham Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So given that retail discounts are being amortized over remaining vaults, is the recurring DPS going to be linked to the amortized NOI or rather to real cash NOI, which should be a bit lower than what's being reported?
Yeah, correct. I mean, I think, the policy is very clear about cash. So that straight lining, it has an impact, obviously, the difference between NOI and overall cash received. That you make back, though, of course, later on in the tenor of the overall contracts. I mean, generally, other than our long anchors in Yas Mall, those vaults are relatively short enough where I don't think there's a massive delta really between cash and accrual, other than this the $11 million from last quarter, and I think the number's up to about $24 million now in terms of overall delta between accrual. So the straight lining impact of some of the stimulus that we've given out, but it's in that order of magnitude.
Understood. Very, very clear. One more question on development proceeds. Given at the current pace of revenues and given that backlog is at 3.1 billion, I see backlog is depleting fast. And for next year, if we continue at these recognitions, nothing would be left for 2022 to be recognized. Is Eldar planning to continue launching in the off-plan sales market to increase backlog?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, that's, in the top 10 list of management priorities, new launches is items 1, 2, and 3. As I mentioned earlier on the call, as market leaders here, we're in great shape to ascertain our customers and what supply demand looks like and what, importantly, what investor sentiment looks like. And look, I just point to Q3 sales, right, to show you what investors think of our market. Whilst we haven't launched new projects, we launched, and opened up for sale a 390-unit tranche of Water's Edge at Yas Island during the quarter, and it sold very, very well. So, we've got, and of course, we had a record quarter, overall for sales this quarter. So I think, look, we're feeling pretty good about our prime customers' ability to recognize value and put capital to work. So I mean, all that's being programmed into our launch calendar right now, and you should definitely expect to see us launching new products very soon.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Next question comes from Admire Mavalvana from Terra Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the call. I have two quick questions. One of them is that given the liquidation of Arabtrek Construction, were you guys exposed in terms of deposits or were they working on any of your projects? As well, has there been any movement on the transaction with the sovereign fund? Thank you.
So on Arabtrek, no, we don't have we have de minimis exposure to Arabtrek. They're a contractor on one of our fee-based contracts that we manage on behalf of the government. But you know, economic risk, counterparty risk in those ones reside with the project owner, the government that we manage on their behalf. Your second question, which is on the sovereign fund, so I presume you're talking about the announcement with ADQ. So that was an MOU we announced in the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We will conclude definitive documents in the fourth quarter, and we will assume management of the existing portfolio of currently under execution projects from the first quarter we expect next year.
Okay. No, I was asking about some of the press reports that came out in July that Mubadala was looking to sell some of their malls and retail assets to Auda.
Ah, okay. That sovereign fund. That's a different sovereign fund. So, we don't, as a matter of policy, speculate on rumors and things like that. And you're referring to a news report that came out during the summer. I'll repeat, the comment I made earlier this morning to some of the media, which was, it's times of dislocation in markets where, you tend to see, corporate action and other things, and it's the strong that not only survive but that thrive in these markets. And we truly believe that the asset management platform, in particular, that the team has built up over the years, is, in our view, the most efficient platform for property ownership in our region. We carry the highest corporate credit rating in the entire Middle East at Baa1. There's no one higher. There are sovereigns higher. There are banks that are regulated that are higher. There are state-owned enterprises that are higher, but no corporate. And we're multi-asset class and at scale. And that's a very unique and valuable and important platform. So, when dislocation takes place in the real estate business, landlords who need to look around or who are motivated to look around, see an efficient actor, and efficient actors in these kind of markets tend to benefit. So, we're having the kind of discussions you'd expect efficient actors to have in times of market dislocation. And when there's stuff to update the market on, we'll certainly do that. But we're doing exactly what you'd expect us to be doing.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Next question comes from Steve Bramley-Jackson from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Greg. I just had a question on ADQ to get a sense as to how rich a vein this is. So at the moment, the $30 billion billion opportunity that you've bitten off, I don't know, out of an existing $50 billion opportunity? Is it $30 billion out of $30 billion opportunity? You know, are or is Alda likely to, I don't know, announce, say, 6 months or 12 months down the road, another significant revenue opportunity from the likes of ADQ? Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think, the $30 billion definitely represents just the initial portfolio of projects. the MOU is contemplating a broad and diverse public-private partnership where Aldar really will be the preferred delivery and development platform for the government. So there definitely will be more that will come from the 30. I think we'll be in a much better position to guide more definitively when the definitive docs and the final perimeter is agreed. But, just in relation to the management contracts, I think that, I think there's reason to think that there could be a lot more coming from that partnership. And then more broadly, Steve, I think what you're seeing in that is really it's a transaction founded in deep trust. You know, the government sees Aldar and has observed Aldar for a decade and plus. It is curated. It has been a shareholder. It's been a regulator and the current embodiment of things. You know, it's a part owner. But what they like most about us is that we're just good at executing, and that's what they need. They're in fiscal stimulus mode, they're in CapEx mode, and they want this stuff delivered quickly and on time and on budget. So it achieves what it's supposed to for them, which is fulfilling, you know, welfare and social programs to improve the livelihood of their citizens. And that's immeasurably valuable to them. So that's what really is happening. And I think the opportunity set that might further emerge from that, you know, is it possible? Yeah, absolutely. I think we're really riding a wave of trust within our market right now.
Thank you. Very clear. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Steve.
We have a follow-up question from Mohammed Haidar, Arkham Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So when the CEO said we shouldn't expect surprises and the dividends, does that mean it's going to be flat with last year?
Well, no, I think what he meant was, you know, the shouldn't be surprises where there's not going to be a different slide that we take to the board to recommend the dividend. You know, we take the exact same slide that you all see, you know, every day of the week on our website. That same slide will go in, the same thinking, the same mentality will go into that discussion. I think that's what he was referring to. I think it'd be a bit premature to and I don't want to get our board, down a certain path or anything. So I think, we're just very transparent about how we think and the calculus and the philosophies that we take into those dividend recommendation discussions.
Understood. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. We have no further questions at this time. Apologies. We have a question from Harshajit Oza from Shure Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. I have two questions. First question on the inventory. I mean, you have mentioned in your presentation that the off-plan, the development revenue off-plan sales have been driven by inventory sales. And, I mean, when I'm looking at the balance sheet, the inventory has been kind of flat. So can you just give some clarity on that? My second question is again on the, off-plan sales and the outlook. Given that you have a successful quarter in terms of new sales and you haven't launched any new projects during this year, I mean, would you be looking to launch something this year, I mean, by end of this year, or you will continue to sell from the existing projects? Thank you.
Yeah, so just on the second question, on inventory and on new project launches, I mean, you should definitely expect us to be looking at launching new projects for sure. You know, I think, as a developer, you're always very careful about when you do that. You want to launch a project when you see demand, you're comfortable with supply, I think off the back of certainly this quarter, as I said earlier on the call, we're liking what our investors and our customers are demonstrating to us in terms of their ability and willingness to put money to work. And we also observed that our market hasn't launched any new projects, at the same time. So, population is going to change a bit. Investor sentiment is generally okay. Dilapidation rates are still high and the demographics are still moving forward. And generally, Abu Dhabi is in a constructive, supply-demand scenario. So I think all that is boding very well for, looking to launch new projects. So I would not be surprised to see us come to the market to launch. And our goal and certainly the business model is about keeping the revenue backlog, the machine, moving forward. Your first question was about inventory. So we did announce a fair bit of inventory sales this quarter, but they're flat year to date. But there's two things happening there. So when we finish an unsold unit, it moves from DWIP and goes into inventory. So there's a natural, populating element to the inventory account, which comes from finished the DWIP. DWIP being unsold units at the time under construction. So then at the same time, that's building up over the course of the year. We're also selling out of it, which is really what you saw this quarter. And that's why you're seeing a net sort of a flattish kind of a number.
Okay. All right, that clarifies. Thank you.
Sure.
We have a follow-up question from Taher Safieddine from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Greg. Sorry, just a follow-up on the recurring portfolio. I'm just looking at the NOI. It has been proving to be resilient, and Q4, ideally is expected to be better than the trend in 9 months, especially within the hospitality. So, my question here is, how can we think about NOI within the recurring portfolio, especially on the retail side? This exercise of revision has been ongoing for a while. Like-for-like rents are still down significantly, and there is some discounts this year. So I just want to get an understanding of how do you look at the NOI into next year on a like-for-like, especially in the retail portfolio. And the second question is just a follow-up from the CEO's statement on Bloomberg this morning talking about logistics as a key segment. This has been coming up quite often over the last couple of quarters. Should we expect something relatively soon? Is this, the M&A that you're talking about in terms of growing the recurring portfolio? Is that what we should expect? And if you can give us some color, maybe say leaseback type of deal that you're looking at when you mention logistics, that would be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. So when we go into the fourth quarter, I think the first like for like thing that would come to mind is hospitality. But I think you need to bear in mind that like Q1 and Q4 is when every hotelier makes all their money in this region. And so whilst things are improving, we're just not going to have. F1's going on in Abu Dhabi, but there's no fans. So it's just not going to be the, capital F1 that we have, historically. And the event calendar just won't be comparing to what it has been in the past. So I wouldn't be guiding or expecting hospitality revenues and profits are this coming fourth quarter that you saw in previous fourth quarters. And that's probably going to be your biggest, look forward comparison on a like-for-like basis, which was your question. In terms of retail, November's a big renewal cycle for us. So a lot of our leases renew in the fourth quarter. And so that renewal time this year is coming at sort of coterminous with at the same time as a lot of the stimulus discussions are ongoing with the tenant. So it's a slightly complicated. A tenant might come and say, I wanted some lower rent, but we're talking really about a stimulus short-term measure to help them through at the same time. If they're going to sign up some longer leases with some, higher turnover provisions or something else in them. So there's good commercial discussions ongoing, and I think all that's being billuped a little bit with, the positive sentiment that's happening in the retail environment right now, like with the Abu Dhabi stores trading right now, certain elements of them on par with the way they were pre-COVID. So, there's still some softness there, but I think reasons to be optimistic. And then commercial and resi, the occupancies are strong, especially in resi. You know, people are talking, oh my God, there's going to be, massive job cuts and expat exoduses and stuff like that. And, I think net, there have been some people leaving, but I think the quality of our portfolio has just been holding up and people are trading down, into our portfolio from other places. And we definitely saw kids in schools. A lot of our schools are in that upper mid, so people trading their kids from schools like premium school to upper mid schools, and that's benefited our academies portfolio, which has helped. I think there's a couple of variables to point to when it comes to fourth quarter NOI. But look, we'll certainly update everyone once we finish with those works. And I reiterate that it's the same slide you guys look at are the ones that we sit down with to do our recommendations. On logistics M&A, yes, I heard Talal mention that. I guess all my comments to stand. I really don't have much else to add to that. I think when you own a portfolio the size of ours, I mean, you're really smart at the stuff that you manage, and you're great at looking at adjudicating M&A within your existing asset perimeter. But then there's assets that you're missing and that you're longing for, and certainly logistics is that one. So, we've talked about that a lot. The issue with our region, it's originating large scale transactions is just hard to do. It's relatively a liquid market, and you got to be really ready to be bold when senior principals and governments and large trading families or state-owned enterprises, when they're ready to transact, you got to be there. And it doesn't happen, once, twice, three times a year. It happens once a cycle. We're having those kind of once in a cycle discussions as we're in a period of dislocation right now. So, we'll see where they all go.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you. We have no further questions. Dear speakers, back to you for the conclusion.
Okay, thank you, Marina, for moderating that, and thank you, everyone, for dialing in, and we look forward to speaking to you in our fourth quarter call. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect.